కొట్టాం. బికాస్ ఆఫ్ మీ మోపులు దానికి చదవట్లేదు. So I plead guilty and in the weekend imprison me at some appropriate time. Then the second thing to say is that on Wednesday we will sit till 6, but I would really prefer to sit till about 10 if it's possible. But the majority of the members are not here, so Lolly, can I try to push you in that we sit till 10 p.m. And what we do is if by 6 members concentration is flagging or whatever, they can leave. It then becomes a subcommittee meeting, and the subcommittee takes no decisions. We just process a bill, and then we report back to Parliament. Okay. Next Friday, you'll be pleased to know, all of us can be on holiday. Even atheists like me, the Friday next week. But the week after, the Tuesday, I think, is a bit tough to ask when we come back on Easter Monday night. Next Wednesday, I think, suggest that we sit from 10 o'clock in the morning to 10 at night, and Thursday from 10 o'clock in the morning to 10 at night. Why we would like to finish the policy issues and various concrete amendments is because then the department's got the whole of the constituency period to start reworking the law. So that is the current proposal, but I must mention that Bulalani Madmanishi is not here, he might still come. Carol tells me there's an apology here. Yeah, it keeps coming here. This is the second time I've got this. You would think we're chairing the Joint Management Committee on Improvement of the Quality of Life and Safety. Sure. Why don't it comes here all the time? Okay, so we have got... yeah, Lolly's got him on here. Hey, Lolly, you're good. Yeah. Well, since you got 18-0 here, but let's negotiate with the others, you know, we don't want to. I'll speak to them. Mamiruti's on leave, she's on sick leave. Jamie Sibanyoni is speaking to some conference being held here in Cape Town on the extension of civil jurisdiction to the regional court. And then, Madmanishi has not explained very yet. I don't know where he is. Dr. Delport's on leave on the other side. And Steve Swart is also tendered his apology. And JJ's in Potterstrom, is that right? Oh, your mom is in Durban. All right, that means we can speedily process issues here in the absence of everybody. And they're not here, that's tough luck. Then you leave that to Carol to sort them out when there are major differences between what we decide. And the same applies, needless to say, to Len. You can agree to everything here, and if Delport doesn't agree, well, tough luck. Where was he?
No, I think he's intimidated. I'm the only member, and I appreciate it.
Hello,
Look,
the fact of the matter also is that we will sit more weekdays. Fridays is tough. So we sit later hours when I think it's also on Thursday afternoon from 2 to about 10. And the department, the local government used to organize takeaways and so on. So we don't want the staff to sit here and provide us with a sit down somewhere in the house and they could be with their families and so on. So what we do is we just have a system where Mr. Dillard, otherwise it was Mr. Dillard, they will deliver whatever you order. If you've done it before and we can't do it again, and it's not something new, the other politicians can do it, justice is no exception. Now, finally, Mr. Bassett has given us the department to fly, and I'd like the engineers to study this, because it's quite expensive to fly. Yeah, just everybody has to see the public office. It's your case about why you agree with this agreement. So it's very important to get to them. They are looking through your documents to see. I've just got a set of you already, but I'm not there. the day at some time, and I'll have him to come back by next Tuesday with Dave. As we agreed, Joshua, you will indulge or underline every day's document. Amendments that you feel were in the submission. We will not agree with those submission amendments. We will see what you think. And then you will read their reply. And then you might, in a spirit of generosity, say, having heard what they said, and even though you don't agree with them, you think, because God is a nice guy who works hard, therefore you will forego your position to serve as long as you want, he or so on. How's that? That's the way politics works. It has nothing to do with substance. It has to do with mood and image and style and, you know, just you feeling good one morning, you agree to everything. I serve Ramaphosa and Bruce Mayer. All these people write these heavy textbooks about how we negotiate. It has to do with all of that. It has to do with what mood Sir Ramaphosa was when he got up. Which side of the bed Bruce Mayer got up. But let's not discuss that now. I am with the camera.
The main issue is whether you didn't have his tea in the morning, that's a lot easier for the committee.
Well, I'll tell you, my God, I discovered yet more submissions that have cooked in something. So don't provoke me, please.
Yeah, I think we can start with the preamble. So over to you, Mr. Bassett. We're on page 7 of the L document, the preamble.
Thank you, Chair. Before we start on that, two documents were handed out. One is an extract from the Law Commission's report dealing with age of criminal capacity, and then there was another document of Professor de Blanche. It's a document dealing with largely with the case of DPP versus P, but what it was handed out for was there's an extract or there's a few paragraphs devoted to age of criminal capacity in different countries, which I think the committee will find useful. We also, I don't know whether you want to visit that now, we've done some preliminary research on Law 7 that was discussed yesterday, and I can ask either Tanda or Lorette to talk to that if you want to, or you might feel that let's leave that for another day.
Yeah, just to say, maybe on Law 7, I know that some of the members, particularly John Jeffrey and Bulalani, to a lesser degree, feel very strongly about consent. So maybe let's leave that and flag that until there are more committee members and then it becomes a proper debate. The other thing was just on age of criminal capacity. We've got two persons here today, one from the United States and one from Switzerland, who have debated this issue very recently, particularly the whole issue of brain development in children. So, if possible, Professor and the lady, I've now forgotten your surname, from Switzerland, if you could maybe, I don't know if it would be possible for you to give us a written document just on criminal capacity, brain development, what the issues that you've addressed in formulating.
Yeah,
and then
so that
we can present it to other members as well, that would be really useful.
I'd be
happy. Great, thank you. Okay, Mr. Bassett.
Thank you. On the preamble then, Chair, the first issue that was raised in the comments was from the Catholic Institute of Education, and I think they're pointing to the first paragraph of the preamble, and they are saying, while the preamble raises the issue that black children were particularly affected by apartheid, seems to be pointing
drafted, obviously the intention is to give, to convey that sense of substantive equality that you want to, that there were degrees of historical discrimination, and that's what I think my reading of the preamble wants to point out. But you obviously have that.
But in 2002, it still could have made sense to refer to that. But now it's again 6 years later. The children we are legislating for now was already born then. Those who are 14 today. Is it still relevant to refer to things before 1994?
Oh, yeah, I know that point. Can we defer this until more people are here? But personally, it's actually the point Lenny's making. But I also agree with what they actually want to say. I'm not like a scientist about it. The truth of the matter is, black children, African children in particular, were considerably worse off than white children. And even to a significant extent, Indian and colored children. And this is not inconsistent with many other pieces. Legislation we passed, although the legal meaning of black would be people of color generally. I mean, again, using the Chinese system, I'm 51% for it, but I'm persuadable. I think we flag this. But can I raise some issues on that very first paragraph? Now, why are we seeing South Africa as a nation? As a nation implies the people as a whole. And it's highly questionable whether we were a nation. Why can't, excuse me, we say South Africa is a country or a government or a state or a society, I don't know, rather than as a nation? As a country. Because a nation, really. And then it's also inconsistent with the use of the black. If you're talking about a nation, it doesn't have any black or white. It's South African, that's the point. So on that I feel stronger. On black, I saw what the Catholic Bishop said. But I'm not going to say I'm like 54% now for black. I get the point Lenny said. But then after this meeting, you want to talk about affirmative action, I'll be on that. I don't think, my own view is, I don't think affirmative action was meant to be applied in the way it is. Personally, that's my view. I've said it in many domains. I'm a Marxist in any case. I apologize to nobody for my belief that if there's a poor, white, Afrikaner, lumpen, proletarian, and other classes, no matter how backward and racist they might be, they're also my natural constituency as wearing another hat. So I don't buy the way we apply affirmative action. In my view, I think a significant part of the ANC doesn't. The debate opened up people at one end, confused about less important matters. In fact, who's going to be president and all that. So, hopefully the issue will come back on the agenda. But yesterday's focus also addressed some issues. I wasn't there. I really think there's a rethink emerging, which is not going to move away from the basic principles and values, but in its application. And for what it's worth, the president of the ANC in one of his moments has himself said it last week, solidarity. That if its consequences are unduly punitive, then there was never the intention. So let's leave the issue of black flag. But on South Africa as a nation, now we've at least dropped the word. Make it country. Somebody's noting all Christine and myself and Carol, but I mean, we need some help from somebody apart from you to change the requirements of the session that we are. Yeah, but we have to do our job too. No, we don't trust you. No, we don't know it's actually our job. I mean, you just, frankly, this document should never have been done by you. It's our job as a parliament. Your document is the one you gave us this morning. And the NGOs are supposed to help us because they make out like they're really resource and they're professors and all that. And these professors, they don't really do much work. You see. All day they're writing documents. Well, for a few months they can write our documents for us.
Okay, paragraph 2.1.
Thank you, Chair.
only we discover, we misunderstand the policy. And as early as the 15th of last week, we must give up saying what exactly the thing is close and then listen to what they say.
I'm pleased you raised that. We have Anna Ostender to do that for us. She's prepared a document, and that's her, what I'm going to ask her to do. Clause 1 is a bit difficult because they're all just disjointed definitions. But be that as it may, I'll ask Tanda to kick off this.
You don't have to read the PM, you let's say four. But can you start raising questions now? Not from the submission, but I've read the draft. Okay. So on the preamble, and people are free to comment, including the NGOs, about the preamble. I'm on page 3 of the paper. You see, it's consequently the purpose of the text. Now, I don't want to be, you know, sometimes it's a public, and then it's a very I thought it was a good idea, it is there for the purpose of the text. Consequently, it's a bit formal.
No problem with that, Chair. And I think we
must... Bridget? Do you have any problems with therefore instead of consequently? You're a journalist. Okay, that's why I'm needling you.
I'm the only person
not allowed to speak yet. We decide. Okay, and therefore sounds simpler, right? Theoretically. Now, I just want to ask you something, Lawrence. Don't say I'm irritating you, and if I am, I'll just bring that up. I read this thing a long time ago, and then I tried reading it the other day and gave up halfway. Especially when it came to the shit from the side, I just thought that that's not going to be not at my age. I read this thing on our time very quickly. You see, the way you write the preamble and elsewhere in the text, sometimes you're saying to establish a criminal justice system for children, right? And you're also saying you establish a criminal justice system, or you're turning the children away from the criminal justice system. So there's a slight strain of, let's say there's not like a startling clarity in what you're doing. Sometimes you seem to be saying, you're taking children away from the criminal justice system. And sometimes you're saying, you are creating a specific criminal justice system for children. So if you think there's some substance in what I'm saying, leave it to me. I will go through this thing, show it to Carol. If she agrees, show it to Christina, the researcher and Molly. If they all agree, we come back to it. They have to tweak these things here and there. I don't think there's a slight strain there.
But I think what you're trying to say is to establish a criminal justice system for children, and in that, in part of that is the diversion, or an integral part of that is the diversion of children away from the criminal justice system.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. But when you read the text, and I read this a long time ago, in January sometime, I've forgotten the arguments, but then the next thing I wanted to ask you was, I really think this is important, and I'm alerting the NGOs to this because I don't think they should misunderstand very well. You see that diamond, those four blocks there, right? You've got a 1, 2, 3. You need to balance the interests of the child and those of society, particularly victims. I think that is important there. And then, the other day, obviously, I don't know whether you've got it in your, presumably you've got it in our documentary, but several people felt that we should, in the preamble, more assertively say something about crime prevention aspects of the bill. That the bill isn't simply to deal with offenders, but to prevent crime. And I think the strong NGO argument is precisely because children are doing the dreadful things that they're capable of and are in fact doing in South Africa, precisely because of that, we need to divert them and have restorative justice and so on. So we say, hey, are 18 capable of being in the country? We say, yes, that's exactly why we think they shouldn't be done something here about plant permission, I think it is. And there's actually some reason for the effect which I couldn't find, but I recall having read last weekend.
It might have come out strongly in the preamble. I'm just trying to refresh my memory to see if that isn't possibly in the guiding principles.
Can't be put in the preamble, surely. See, the other thing they say, and all they're not speaking for themselves, by the way, I'm not their spokesman. And I have been thinking last week, and I'm not familiar enough with issues, but the other thing they say is that, people go through the prison. They provide statistics. Now, I don't know whether the statistics are accurate. If some other academic has other statistics, they say if putting people back into the criminal justice system should be there, the percentage of, reoffending is another way of saying, happens higher. So that is why I don't think it should simply be in the principle. It should be in the preamble. I think the preamble is very helpful. And somehow I get the feeling that the preamble, I don't know, I don't hear from them. Before I read what they said, I don't know for myself. I don't like being influenced by anybody. So, you know, I mean, I ultimately, you know, hear it by everybody. But what I mean is I like to first get my own views. And when I read this thing, I really must tell you, Lawrence, I felt the preamble was so great, but the substance of the bill now and then seemed to be at variance with the spirit of the preamble. And then, hey, what do I see? I read Ed Skelton et al., you know, Dr. et al., and I see they saying the same thing. And I never had tea with them. I never had discussions with them. The last time I spoke to Ed Skelton was when she was married about 5 years ago. So, you know, independently, we arrived at the same conclusion. But let Carol speak. I don't know what she thinks.
Yeah, I just said that the last time we had a discussion on this in the committee, we actually did decide that crime prevention should be a focus. The other thing that we discussed was that we need to, in the preamble, try to unpack restorative justice and get the point across that victims are very important. Because it seems in the committee that sort of the rights of victims are sort of a bit of an afterthought in the preamble. And that restorative justice is not a soft option. That sort of thinking, so that that we don't inadvertently send out a message that we're being soft on crime. And that had to come through a little bit stronger in the preamble, because there is a perception of the well-being youth probably definitely used to be, and it's not as bad as it was in the past, but that restorative justice is sort of soft on crime.
When we're looking at it from the victim-centered perspective, we need to guard against the proportionality aspect of the bill, because the adversarial system will balance the triad, victim, community, and the offender. The restorative justice, and if one couches it against the restorative justice system, the victim's needs as well is one of the aspects. So when we're putting the victim-centered, even though I know as a country we've taken the position on the victim's charter, if you look 10, 15 years ago, we had centered our issues on offenders or accused persons, which is historically where we've come from as a country, and our detention was our trial. 15 years later, we're into victim-centered. We don't know 20 years from now where we're going to go. But restorative justice will push us towards balancing community and victim and offender. So I'm just raising that as a caution. We can emphasize restorative justice, but always keep in mind that we are dabbling with two systems here, and we shouldn't overemphasize the one or the other, as society will dictate later on that we need to change in the law. So we need to keep that be guarded about that.
Well, then we could formulate the notion of victim justice in a way that fits the law, rather than the full blown way that the mainstream wants.
Yes, because just what I wanted to add to that is a very important aspect, but it's also the fact that this is a criminal justice system also for children. So the children who will still go through court for serious offences, they will not be facing the same kind of court system. So that we should never lose sight of that, because the bill does both. They have two channels here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you could say that restorative justice is applicable to the whole process. Even the children who will go through a trial and will be sentenced, you would still be applying, you could still be applying restorative justice principles. That was the original idea. And it is a more recent invention of justice department that is still bifurcated that some children don't get restorative justice. And remember, if we're serious about victim-orientedness, then you don't decide for the victim that because this case is serious, they can't have restorative justice. Victims very often express that why does that victim, because it's a less serious crime, can go to a family group conferencing, but because this is a more serious one, that my needs are that I want to face this offender. However, of course, it is true to say that sometimes you would do that as a diversion, and sometimes you might do that to a sentence, and the bill allows for all of that. And whilst I have the mic on, can I just say that one of the things that we're a little bit concerned about is if you see in the preamble the word certain children, certain children will get this, certain children will get that. I suppose what it reminds us is that when you've finished with all your policy decisions, you'll have to go back to the preamble and check whether it in fact reflects what you've decided.
Yeah,
I read
all the things. So let's come back to it. Yeah. Everyone's back to the
preamble law.
Yeah. But you know what, we can convey a sense of now came on to some, how can we explain something?
You have responsibilities to you, you're serving the executive. We understand that you have responsibilities to your principles. But there are some things that, you know, whatever your principles say, this committee ain't going to budge it. And one of the things is, some of the things we're saying to you, do the amendment now. But come what may, the option will be for the minister to withdraw the bill. Or we will not budge on certain things. So let's itemize the amendment that must be made now, whatever your principles say. And other issues that we will prefer some appropriate structure with our principles. Because I repeatedly say, I just think there was much more strength to the change in the meeting 2002 than is being conveyed here. And I think that the person responsible should be given a full chance to have been heard. So we will find that opportunity. But, like, for example, some of the things we will see on is also like wording issues. There's a fine strain between, I think it's like two channels, I think. But also the wording of taking people away from the criminal justice system, yet having a specific system for them, and so on. On crime prevention, I don't think we want to debate that. We want it there. It's non-negotiable for us. The only issue that we will probably defer on, even with your principles, is the content of it. And what I would like to suggest, if Carol agrees, and especially also Glenn agrees, I think you need to strengthen the right of victim here somewhere. It's just too soft. So, you know, when I say people should draft things, I'm also alerting you to people. I know you have a thousand things to do, but already Tumisang is here, and we will introduce you to each other. And soon, in another week or so, you'll have somebody else, won't you? But I'm saying you must do it. You can note what the committee needs to do. We can't write on the executive to do it for us. Carol and I will try, and then either you, your partner, or Tumisang will help us to draft this as well. So in short, we'll agree on some things. The rest of the things we can flag, like certain, and so on, we'll come back to it. And then just on crime prevention and perhaps victims as well, to this extent, I've had a quick glance at clauses 2 and 3. Crime prevention doesn't feature very strongly. That's the guiding principle and objective.
I think it's
important
that this goes back to the end. Because this problem of
component. And if you look at the preamble, which we've changed, which is there for the purpose of this act, and if you look on the next page in specific terms, ought we not to include a section that reminds us of the monitoring component that we would like to have?
Chair, I wonder why we're on the preamble, or before we step off the preamble and the long title go so closely together, that's so intellectual, I wonder if we should have a look at those two together.
Might be a good idea to do it, should we?
Sorry, Certainly. We've looked at the South Africa's obligations as party to international instruments. The one that we haven't included here is also our regional instruments, because the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child is a very strong guiding document for us, and we've ratified that, so we have a legal obligation to that. I think it was just an omission in this part. I want to consider that.
Then just before we step off the preamble, there are still one or two issues in the L document on the preamble that we should.
Suggesting that an additional paragraph be inserted to the following fit, so promotes a safe South Africa for all by intervening to break the cycle of crime and violence, preventing further criminal activity and active victimization through mechanisms that simultaneously reduce the pressure on the criminal justice system.
How do people feel? What is the department's response? Personally, I don't have a problem with that. The last part, that sort of reducing pressure on the criminal justice system, that sort of seems like it shouldn't be there in that sentence. It's a bit disjointed. But I think when you redraft in any of the interdivisive, then some of those sentiments will be worked into the redraft. So I don't know, maybe I'll miss you back. Any strong feeling? No. Okay. I think just bear that in mind when you do the redraft.
Is for the object of the bill. The object clause was repeated in the same as it was in the redrafted bill, and it's indicated in the redrafted bill as to protect the right of the children, as contemplated in section 28 of the Constitution, to promote the spirit of Ubuntu in the child justice system by fostering children's sense of dignity and worth, and holding the children accountable for their actions. It also includes to promote children from being exposed from the effects of the formal criminal justice system, and to promote cooperation between the relevant departments and other organizations involved in the children issue.
As I've said, this really also doesn't come out strongly as far as prevention is concerned, and the things that we said for the preamble, I think we need to have a look in and strengthen the objects clause there as well.
I think some of the issues that we've raised in the discussion on the preamble, maybe we might want to work back in there as well. Just you back, anything? The NGOs?
We're happy with this. It's very similar to the original in the 2002 book.
Yeah.
Very good point.
What word do you want to add?
Well, it's an integrator, perhaps. would it be?
I know, but what would it be? How would it be?
It's the same with that woman.
Right.
She's the sentiment.
Again, on the difference between must and should. There's some places where we use must and then we use should.
Should is just a, you know, must is that you've got to, you've got no options. You must apply those. The should, I think, gives the people that are applying the act the discretion. I think I could take it further than that.
I've been wanting to use my personal name. I know I shouldn't use my personal name as a chair, but
Presumably, it's now in the form it is.
victims who also have rights, and to communicate to children or to people who work with children or to the parents that if their children commit serious offense, then, you know, that will be taken into account. But it won't be the sole thing to take into account. The reason I keep saying this is because I would like to explain to people the way the ANC works, okay? So that I'm especially addressing myself to Natasha and Anne, who else is here. See, the way it works is, at the moment we're brainstorming, so it's free-flowing discussion. Then we will organize our thoughts in a study group. And in the study group, people will probably differ more than they do here. Sometimes people are restrained about deferring, differing in committee meetings. And then we might find that some of the things we've agreed to tentatively here, we get defeated by a majority. Some committees, the chairperson says, well, I don't care, and goes there and does what they want. In other committees, chairperson say, no, you know, whatever view I have, the majority don't agree, it's fine. Then what happens is, there's nothing to hide. We then look at whether the amendments we have made conflict with ANC policy, or the impact upon the Treasury's purse in a way that's unreasonable, which will cause Trevor Manuel to fall off his chair if he sees what this bill is meaning. Or if there's something that the department was meaning to do anyway by way of legislation that's come pending, and we are anticipating that there's no need to take the fix and stop from here, which we did with public enterprises. Alec came to us and said, you know what, I'm doing the same thing in this shareholder management bill. Why are you doing it only for SAA? What about ESCO Transit? So we took it out. And then he wrote a letter to confirm to us that when the shareholder management bill comes, he'll have it there. We put his letter into the report for the committee to see. But when the shareholder management bill comes, all these provisions that apply to SAA will become generic to all state-owned enterprises. So the fourth reason is we try to see whether there are any unintended consequences to what we sought to do. If we acted in good faith, but now the executive obviously has insights that we don't have on capacity and possibilities and unintended consequences. Then we then come back and review our position. In the 10 years I've been chairing, only twice have we ever given in on those issues to people on the executive side. But then you see we have to take the bill to caucus. And the mood of the Justice Study Group and the fact that we have deliberated doesn't really count as much as what does caucus actually think. And if this bill appears in caucus in 2 weeks before which 9 or 10 children have done horrific things, the mood's going to be against the gay. You people are being populistic and so on. So that is why I want to plead with the NGOs that it has to be a trade-off, a balancing act. You're not going to get everything you want. We would like to give you more than you want, but then, you know, it's not workable because the caucus will say, no, you bent too much in one direction. Personally, I would like to also to join the Communist Party because those aims are very consistent with the Communist Party, actually. I mean, a real, live, active Communist Party, transcending the issues of the last 2.5 years about who's leaders. Communists don't believe that's supposed to be preoccupied too much with that, that's important. But the point is, you see, if you look at what you're saying, essentially, let me put it clearly, you're saying structure creates crime. It's Marxism, more than any other thought, the style of thinking that has argued that. Marxism creates crime. And Marxism believes that criminals are not produced by biology and genes and culture so much as by structure, especially structures that are unequal. So your point seems to be, as I told somebody, because structure creates criminals, especially under the LGBT, therefore the structure has no right to penalize them. That's what you essentially saying in a crude way. And I'm saying to you, great, that's what a socialist, not Stalinist now, not recognizing their victims that we have to bear with. So all I'm saying is that at the end of the day, what we're going to come with, and Christine's going to help us with that, we'll come with like a six-pager and say, these are six things we've agreed on, but you have to concede on two. So for example, you know the deal might be, I'm afraid to say it's as crude as that. We might say, because we are allowing assessment for all, preliminary inquiry for all, and consideration for diversion for all, therefore, give up on the issue of 12, let's make it 10. You know, the criminal age of response. Or vice versa. So I want you to put your thinking caps on. We have to carry an ANC caucus with us.
Okay, yeah. Can I respond? Look, I mean, I think we are reasonably pragmatic. We work in the real world. We actually work with children. Somebody's handed out this case story about the girl, the 12-year-old who murdered her grandmother. I represented that girl. I've been there.
Yeah.
But the thing is, at the same time, we, in the first place, the original draft of the bill, the one that at that time the executive and the NGOs broadly agreed on, was in itself a fairly well-structured and balanced bill, because it always allowed us the possibility that some children would have to go through the criminal justice system, would end up being convicted, and some would go to prison. And we fully accept that. We don't have a problem with that. But I do, and we also know that deals are struck and that arrangements are made, but there are some things that it's difficult to compromise on. I think maybe the example you chose is not a good one, because issue like criminal capacity, for example, is not something that I think can be traded off. The committee must make its decision based on evidence and what is real. Can children below 12 really have criminal capacity sufficiently to be able to answer charges in a court? And whether you decide on 10 or 12, I think that decision should be made very much on a principle basis. There might be other things that are...
No, sorry,
I know you were giving this an example, but I think there may be other things. So of course we accept compromises will be made. That's always the process.
So you are beginning to think about that.
Yes.
We
become fully armed. We've been through this process once before. But I think that the important issue is that we're flagging, you know, the issues that we think are the non-negotiables.
Yeah.
We fully realize that negotiation happens even on all of those as well. You know.
But the way you write, that all of these things are non-negotiable. There's nothing on which you can see this argument. Except some of you have said it's different to 10 for the minimum age of criminal response. Apart from that, you look at your 10. By the way, I know you're 6 minutes in user by now, because I've been reading it more recently. And by the week, you know, I've been reading it.
Well,
I can tell you, have made no concessions so far that I can see. 60% of the stuff I've read.
Well, Chair, remember that, of course, we also come here knowing that one has to pitch a strong position. Because you're telling us now that, you know, things get negotiated. So we're telling you. But I do, at the same time saying that, is I'm saying that some of the things we say are non-negotiable because for us they are. But, of course, minor wording things that we're now starting to talk about, there's so many ways to draft a particular section or a word or whatever. So we'll keep pointing out to you what our concerns are, but we accept that not every word that we have to hear is going to end up on this.
Yeah, I think it's really very quickly.
I spoke to Ron a moment ago, and I'll speak to Layden, and Steve Swart is very important because, you know, he's also a very valuable member of this committee. Is that maybe what we do is try to finish as much as possible before we arrive in the last weekend of March. Then we will conduct our party political processes. But either before or after that, we will have a closed meeting, a subcommittee meeting, with some opposition members, or else we'll sit with you and say, you know, what Christine and Carol have done, they're talking. And say, look, you can't have all of this right now. But what we will do in our report to Parliament is say, let's phase in some of these things. So that's the way we need to go. We'll call you in and then we tough on each other. We bring in the department, and we tell them, hey, we don't just believe what you say. But the more I think about it, you know, I want to be very honest, Cam and others, and Cam also. It is Cam, the real person. I think she agrees on the other people's
perspective. Just to say, this is coming from someone who called me a what? Unrealistic.
Right.
Idealistic. Do good.
That sounds like what I would have said about them. That reinforces my view. But they're not even going to watch Caroline. But anyway, no, I'm not serious now. I really tell you, the more I think about it, I've been thinking a lot, Lawrence, about this thing. And I think it's irresponsible to be populistic, right? That I really find it hard to believe. We're social developers out of here. And the NPA, meet with the NGOs in that closed type meeting, and before we go to the political structures of the ANC, we really want them all to come one morning, as Carol was saying earlier. I think you were saying it to me. They must present to us collectively and convince us that they can do. Which is not to say, hey, we're going to say if they can't do it, don't do it. But then we're going to insist that they grow the capacity to do it. Okay.
Just ask a question. In the 2002 bill, did we run out of time then? Or what went wrong there? We don't repeat the same thing. Is it just a question of time?
Well, maybe Mr. Bassett also knows the sort of
I'm not too sure when you refer to running out of time. We got to a certain stage in the bill in 2003. It was deliberated actually in 2003, right up until September. And then the Parliament dissolved for the April 2004 elections, and the committee never got back to the bill. The bill lapsed, and after the 2004 elections, Parliament revived the bill, as it were, by means of a motion or resolution, I can't remember, and said that the bill now before the new Parliament is at the stage where it was when it was last deliberated on. But I think what I should also mention, that the committee mandated the then chairperson of the portfolio committee to work with the drafters on the bill and to bring it back to Parliament after the 2004 elections.
I'm just worried we're going to run out of time again, because if I look at the programme, we don't have much time.
No, we're
going to
finish. Yeah, I think
we're
going to
finish.
How is the deal with the programme when it comes to the late in the last of solar? Have you seen the problem? The only issue that they are trying to tell is that they have to call the issue of court code before the end of June, because we extended the life of the judicial court. What part of the Black Administration Act? This problem is under certain regulations, so the question is not to do that. So that will take priority in the I don't think we're going to have a big role to play in the court in the way things are emerging. But let's
traditional courts for you mentioned that the deadline of June, by then it must have gone through both
houses. Yes, I know.
That's good.
You know when they're going to
certify? I'm hoping that it's going to be in this coming week. We're putting tremendous pressure.
How many days is it?
About, I think about
30 pages. I saw hands. Christine, your hand was up earlier, and Professor, and then Dr. Lowen.
I just had a small comment to try to come out of this.
Perhaps inappropriate from somebody from the United States, but it's in response to your comment about the media and about sensational cases. As our case was going to the United States Supreme Court around the question of the juvenile death penalty, as you can imagine, our worst fear happened, which is that the D.C. sniper cases in which 15 people were shot and killed, two people were arrested wonderfully, and one of them turned out to be a 17-year-old, our worst fear, in a way, the booster child. And so I just want to note that one of my colleagues referred to this as the tyranny of small numbers. It's a very tiny, tiny proportion, you know, less than 1% of people swept into the juvenile justice system are involved in terrible crimes, and yet it's the tail wagging the dog kind of phenomenon. And so you want to make sure that the system that you construct is designed for the vast majority of children who commit small offenses and then recover and go on to become productive citizens, and not for that worst case scenario. And so just a note from your colleagues from across the
when I'm in the United States on a holiday sometime, I can also roll into your Congress and speak. On any bill, whether I know what it's about or not, and say, well, we gave the same courtesy to a professor from some university. Can you leave me on your card? I'll give them the person and say, well, I want my 5 minutes.
My pleasure.
points there in the old document, I think we've discussed. The only one that we haven't really addressed is the point that the Catholic Institute makes on culture, on cultural values, and it being subjective. But one could argue that cultural values by itself are always subjective, and rightly so. And I think your response document is quite a good one. But let me hear other members of the bureau.
1.1
on page 9 of the old document.
Do you want me to respond? Well, that's in the document there. It's a subjective clause. It's difficult to determine cultural values. The principle needs to be stated more clearly that cultural values and beliefs of the child must be respected with such values and beliefs established in practice in the community. Culture should not be abused in the administration of justice.
Maybe we're able to
say something.
I can't really add something more than a response at the moment, because if you read it says every child should be treated in a manner which takes into account his or her, and that would be then, I think we thought that was adequate before committing to debate it. In any event, a court would look at the particular child who appears before it at the time and their circumstances and based on individual merit. So my personal view is leave it to the discretion of the court. Are other members happy? Okay. Then anything else on clause 3?
Yeah, there's 1.2. Yes, they're saying, sorry, 1.2, they're saying that as fast as possible or something, speedily as possible ain't okay. And your reply is, well, you can put in the word without unreasonable delay. And I think that's a good answer. And I think we should accept what you're saying. And I hope that nobody's going to disagree. Okay, good. So we agree with what you are saying. Now, if you've got the L document, and then let's call this the D document, or the department document. Okay. So the D document on page 8, we're accepting 1.2.
That's wording similar to what's in the Constitution.
Yeah, that's a better wording, without unreasonable telling. We agree with. Okay, then the next quick thing is, they're saying that the Child Justice Alliance, right, that you omitted an original clause 312, which deals with the child's right to remain in contact with his or her family and have access to social services. And 28.1c of the Constitution guarantees social services for children. This law should not do less. Now, here, your concern as a department is that it may not be practicable. You can't do this thing. So can't that be as far as possible time? May you think? Why are you saying no? Why have you removed it altogether? First, let's hear from the department. We've already heard from Ed, but she can explain in a moment.
What we said, clause 3F of the 2007 vote presupposes contact with family members. Just give to it.
Yeah, isn't it covered there?
The social services that we are having an issue with, and also that contact should be, so there are two aspects. Contact should be with parents throughout the process, and we think that maybe the provision where it's dealt with in the Act only deals with in a courtroom. But what about when the child's still in a police cell? What about when the child's going for a lineup? You know, that's different. And then the other issue is social services. Sorry, excuse my outburst. It was the fact that if the Constitution says that a child has a right to social services, that is unqualified and immediate. There's no, what's the word? You can't progressively realize those rights in Section 28. So therefore, it's not possible to have a formulation that weakens that constitutional provision, which might be why the drafters took it out rather than qualifying it. It would be better to take it out than to qualify it.
Preeminently about children in conflict with the laws about child justice system.
you and your team and your principles. So, I mean, I'm being serious. And then one raises questions and suddenly you just give in. I don't think we'll find your ground. Because, you know, I don't get intimidated by him. In any case, we can always tell her not to speak. She's going to know right here. So, I mean, you know, why are you intimidated by him? Well, did you see our team winner last night? Your team was some agreement that let's run a show here, let's have an exhibition, and you say some things and I'll say some things, and we'll make the committee feel that we disagree, but really we've agreed on what the final picks of the poll will be. You will think of it, with due respect, you will think of, I'm sure there's some argument there.
I would also just like to add chair, if I might.
She doesn't vote for
even though the Constitution says in Section 28, every child has the right to basic nutrition, shelter, health, care services, social services, must always be read in the light of Clause 36, the Limitation Clause, which says you can limit every right in the Bill of Rights to the extent that nature of the right, importance, purpose of the limitation. And I think it comes back to the fact that social services really, we also went when we went to look at Clause 7 now, we really looked again at the Children's Act, even though it's not enacted yet, and the children's, I mean, and that's where your social services, and even there, I think if we go and read it, it's not going to be a complete, it will also have been tinkered to adapt to the specific what the government can provide for at the moment. So I'm just afraid, yeah, but I'm pretty sure the reasoning was not to put it in there so bluntly.
Chair, I think there's a better argument that they can use. So here's my effort at compromise. Probably they don't think it's necessary to put in the Act because it's in the Constitution, so it's there anyway. So even if you don't put it in, children still have a right to social services. And it might be, it would be better to leave it out rather than qualify it. Because my view is you don't want to qualify in an Act something that is an unqualified right in the Constitution. So, would you agree with me, Ruth?
I would just state it differently. I would say if we put it in the Act without a qualification, it's more dangerous because in the Constitution you can limit it under 36 and we don't have a limitation necessarily if we're going to use the word must in here. So I would just put it that way around.
I think that's the only compromise she means to offer in this entire 400-hour process. Now, look, you know, basically kind of dislike this thing. I feel very uncomfortable about leaving it out, really. But I also recognize the problems. And look, you are lawyers and creative and so on. There may be a way that we include it without it being unduly onerous and in its application in this particular Act, but at the same time doesn't undermine what you say in the Constitution anyway. So I would suggest we just put it, let's flag it, and Carol and I will apply our minds.
Let me just add, because this is also the issue, you know, those members who went with us the day we went to Portsmouth, when we were seeing those awaiting trial children, were just sitting there for months, in some cases years, no social services, no education programs, no family contact, no sport programs, no legal aid, and some of them were sitting there for, in one case, sitting there 40 months. Let's flag it and maybe take it to a bigger committee. But yeah, I think you should read in Florence from that.
Now, one of the points I would like to raise is when you look at the monitoring framework, and it depends on how the committee would organize itself, a very important factor to consider is the progressive realization of rights when it comes to those justiciable socioeconomic rights in the Constitution. Section 21(8)(c) is one of those. We can progressively, through the policy framework, if that's what you eventually decide, like you decided in the Sexual Amendment Act, then look at it, because what it would then do is develop the baseline indicators which we must look at annually. But one has to also take into account whether we have that, and if it becomes qualified or however you decide it needs to be in the guiding principles, it's going to set us up and just think about the fruitful judgments 15 or 10 years later on. We had a judgment, but whether we have complied with it thereafter is another question. So we also don't want to set ourselves up as the state to say we're going to put this here and then can we realize it. It could be something that I may wish to consider in how you draft the monetary component of it. And I think progressively, if it's there, it creates the baseline indicator which we can measure ourselves, which we can then monitor from as an oversight body.
detention, you know, from any court or whatsoever. So I'm just raising that as a guard on how we misinterpret and how the Constitution expects us to interpret their progressive realization of rights.
Chair, I think Shireen sort of covered me as far as that's concerned. I think that that's the thing that should feature strongly in the monitoring portion. There was something else that I wanted to say here as well. I forgot. Inputs from the department through our trained departments would also be important as far as this is concerned. You know, to what extent can they play an into the social development and correctional service?
Chair, the committee must be interested in two High Court judgments that have recently said that Section 28(1)(c), the section we've been talking about in the Constitution, is not subject to progressive realisation, because although Section 26 and 27 for adults is, Section 28 is unqualified. And I can bring those two judgments for you. They're both centres for child law. One is versus Home Affairs, and the other is versus the MEC for Education in South King. That latter one is in the 2008-1, and the other, I think, is 2006.
The document, and to you with the departments are not familiar with the document very well this morning, you will speak to your own document until I am able to read it, and others here. But the other thing that's asked here is, what have we decided now about 2.3 on the other document, right? On this matter, we've flagged it, right? And then, so every child has a right to maintain contact with his or her family and to have access to social services is flagged, okay? And then, now what about 2 years? What's this, any of the police official? Yeah, it's Child Justice Bill at Alliance, CJB 13. Look at page 9. At the very bottom, you've got a subsection 2. So let's explain what's here. And they wanted this in the...
It's a proposal. I think we've dealt with the age. Every child that wants to choose has the right to maintain contact with his or her family and to have access to social services. That we've dealt with. And then I think they're also proposing the addition of a sub-clause 2.
Yeah, that's the one I'm referring to.
Any police official director of public prosecutions prosecuted designated thereto by the director, inquiry magistrate or officer presiding at the child justice court must consider the following principles when making any decision regarding the release of a child from detention. And then that lists a range of things to want me to read them out. Preference must be given to the release of the child into the care of his or her parent or an appropriate adult, with or without the imposition of any conditions. If the release of the child into the care of his or her parent or an appropriate adult is not feasible, the release of the child on bail must be considered, and if the child must be detained as a measure of last resort, the least restrictive form of detention appropriate to the child and the offence must be selected. I just want to give my response there.
Our response to that is that the guiding principles should deal with overarching aspects, and clause 21 of our bill, in any event, deals with and sets out the approach to be followed when considering the release or detention of children. And these aspects that they're mentioning here are very specific, and we're dealing with them in various places, and they're not guiding principles. They're specifically going to void the bill, and we've incorporated these aspects in different places. On reading clause 21, I'm happy with clause 21, and if we need to maybe strengthen it, we can strengthen it with clause 21 instead of putting it, okay, happy.
G, you've got
not as common as particular blah blah blah. All children notwithstanding their background, what do you mean notwithstanding their background, notwithstanding any color, race,
so where they come from,
middle class or
where you come from, urban area.
Oh, yeah.
Certain circumstances, they can also be treated as children. I mean,
explained, comes from the Law Commission, and this whole, I know the chair also raised it once, why do we have this age category of 18 to 21? And there was just a nice section of that I could maybe read to the committee. It's in any case in our response document to the Legal Aid Board, but it also applies to the Catholic Institute of Education. There's just an extract from the Law Commission's report explaining why we have this category in here, even though it's welcomed by other NGOs. People were not always clear on the definition of child, and so submissions were actually made there. What the Law Commission did reason is, it said the Commission proposed limited exceptions to the general rule that the bill only applied to children below the age of 18, and detailed three instances. The most significant of these are instances where, in the discretion of the DPP, the Director of Public Prosecutions, a person's individual circumstances are such that such person would benefit from the protections contained in the bill, and where several persons are co-accused of the same offense, while the majority of them are below the age of 18 years. The exceptions apply only if the accused person, irrespective of whom the extended jurisdiction is sought, is below the age of 21 years. The provisions have been included in order to provide more flexibility to the prosecution. There may well be occasions where a person who has just attained the age of 18 years is still attending school and could benefit from the diversionary provisions spelled out in the bill. Similarly, where a group of children is alleged to have committed the same offense, it may be artificial to separate the cases of one or two of them who are slightly older than from those of their contemporaries. And then just also to add on to this, that Tanda pointed out to us as well, that the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child in their general comment number 10 also emphasized that the committee notes that with appreciation that some state parties allow the application of the rules of regulations of juvenile justice to persons 18 years or older. So that's just trying to explain, and I think the legal experts when they're looking at this didn't quite understand where we were coming from, the same with the Catholic Institute. My suggestion would be that we maybe come back to this clause once we've looked at the definitions and also once we've decided on some of the principal policy decisions, because the whole 10 or 12 may change. So without having to put Mr. Bassett through a redraft exercise and then we come back and we change it again. So could we flag it maybe and come back? Anything else on what people raise later? Okay, clause 5.
Clause 5 deals with medical surgeries. This is a new provision which was not in the introductory space, and makes a provision for a situation where a child is charged with more than one offense. And the clause provides that where a child is charged with more than one offense and the offenses are tried in the same criminal proceeding, the most serious offense will guide the manner in which the child should be dealt with. And the offenses are listed in the schedules. Schedule 1 contains the minor or petty offenses. Schedule 2, serious offenses. Part 2 of Schedule 3, most serious offenses, and the most serious offenses are contained in Part 1 of Schedule 3 of the bill.
When we're looking at what principles we're using to balance,
irrespective of it, we need to be mindful it's a child justice bill, and everything will always be subject to the best interest principle in the Constitution.
Just my question as well, I mean, surely the whole bill is about what's in the best interest of the child. So I couldn't see why, particularly in this clause, they could be, I would have thought that they would have raised it under the guiding principles rather, but yeah.
It links to our point, which is coming next, and that is that this clause of the bill is one of those that directs where the children are going to go in the system. It's part of what we call bifurcation, and its starting point is the offence.
That's what I was going to say, because that's what the Child Justice Alliance has said. We assume that that could possibly be what the Catholic Institute was getting at, and that's a fundamental approach that's
I think, Chair, in a way, once you've made all your other policy decisions, you can come back to the stores and decide if you still need it.
Members, happy to proceed that way. Eunice, I think, is you bad? Happy.
So a child below the age of 10 years is presumed not to have criminal capacity, and the presumption cannot be rebutted, which means that a child under the age of 10 years cannot be held to the criminal level or to have the criminal capacity and cannot be prosecuted.
So before we even start our discussion there, on that, just I think we should delete the reference to below 10 years, and this, that's in clause 6.2, says the common law pertaining to the criminal capacity of children below 10 years is hereby amended to the extent set out in the section and section 9. That should be, I think, section 9. Our suggestion is that we delete the below 10 years. And there were some comments on that clause.
Tell us
court says as it is now, well, what Jinji says, I think, sorry, the majority of us agree that we haven't taken any final position. And when we go to the study group, somebody, a learning category, will realize it's going to be her. We're going to say, this is what the law says, and this is what we've decided as a study group for now. What do everybody, what does everybody think?
Just before Tanya tells us what the law is currently, Tanya and I also worked on a response to exactly what the committee said. We thought it would be better maybe if Mr. Jeffries is here to ask us very questions again, because we did go and research exactly, and we have a response from the department. It's about 4 pages, but we still will deal with the counter argument.
Yeah, but if somebody could be given to us, it just slips our mind, and when we have the discussion, it helps. I don't think it's. So give us an overview. And change is not God either. I mean, if we don't agree with him, we will persuade him. We don't have to do that. Okay, so give us a short overview, and we will tell him to await an answer from him when he comes. So what did he say, and then what did JJ say, and what did you say?
The clause that we stand currently provide for the manner of dealing with a child below the age of 10 years. The clause provides that, clause 7, subclause 1, and provides that if a police official believes that a child suspects him of committing an offence below the age of 10 years, the police may not arrest the child. The police official must take the child to the child's home or to the basement facilities immediately, but not later than 48 hours. The police official must then inform the probation officer. The probation officer who will then have to assess the child within 7 days of the notification from the police officer. After assessment, the probation officer may do one of the following. May either refer the child to a children's court, in which case then the child would be dead in terms of the Children's Act or in terms of the Child Care Act, which is currently operative. Or the probation officer may refer the child for counseling or therapy, or may refer a child to an accredited program for children under below the age of 10 years, or may arrange for support services for the child. Or the probation officer may decide to take no action, or the probation officer may arrange a meeting with the child and his or her parents to establish the circumstances around which the allegation, and in order to formulate an appropriate plan for the child. The purpose of the meeting that the probation officer may arrange are to assist the probation officer to establish more fully the circumstances surrounding the allegation against the child, and to formulate a written plan appropriate to the circumstances of the child. The plan must at least specify the objectives to be achieved, the terms of the services and assistance to the child, and the organization of the team to provide services or assistance. And this is, and that's the state and state responsibilities of the child and the parent or an appropriate adult. And clause 7 provides that the decision of the probation officer must be taken by the probation officer to the magistrate to be made the order of the court. Failing to protect both children and the broader public
in due consideration were not given to those children who, despite below the minimum age of prosecution, find themselves in trouble with the law. It has been argued that the proposed child justice system might lose credibility if a public perception were safe to take root that children below a certain age may commit crimes with impunity. Similarly, the point has been raised that organized criminals may seize the opportunity presented by the irrebuttable presumption to use children below the age of 10 to commit offenses. The Commission therefore proposes that children who are irrebuttably presumed to lack criminal capacity may still be subject to some procedures in terms of this legislation, albeit not through the mechanism of the criminal law. It is proposed that children under the age of 10 years be assessed and that a children's court inquiry may be opened. That is, you would see it's still in this bill as the assessment, and it's still there in subclause 3I that you can refer to a children's court for the inquiry, or a family group conference convened, which is still in this bill, and it's in Roman 5, prescribed manner, arrange a meeting between all the parties, or a probation officer may ascertain whether support to the child and either or family is required. Where children are below the age of 10, they will therefore still have access to social services, counseling, and reintegration services when this is indicated. And the Commission had a footnote there where they referred to the Netherlands, and they had an international expert present who said that to this end, information in respect of those children below the age of prosecution is fed into the system and kept that's on their system by their child protection board. And this expert argued that the benefit is that early intervention can minimize the further progress of young people into the criminal justice system by offering family programs and educational support. So based on the above recommendations, the Commission therefore proposed in their draft, and you will find it in the Commission's report, and I've attached it to the handout today, it's the last two pages of this handout. You will see there was a clause 46 and a clause 47. And you will see that clause 46 is in essence clause 7 that we have today, except that 7-7, that process of where it has to be made in order of the court, was not there, and a bit of other nuances. But another important, this is it's the Law Commission's extract that we did, and I just included those two clauses there. And in the last page, you will see they also had a clause 47 that said, failure, and this is where maybe I should just remind the committee of, we also then looked at what was the committee's concerns yesterday or the day before. It said the clause 7 is incorrectly placed, maybe. Are there not already provisions in the Children's Act that could be used for children under the age of criminal capacity? And these children are not criminally responsible yet. Why do we expect them to comply with orders? And if you look at what the Law Commission had, which is missing in our current bill, they had a clause saying failure of child below the age of 10 years to attend assessment or to comply with obligations. Where a child below the age of 10 years failed to attend an assessment or failed to comply with any obligation, the probation officer, like the therapy or any other program that they develop for a child under 10 specifically, if the child failed to comply with that, the probation officer may request the children's court, so that's the children's court under the Children's Act, having jurisdiction to open an inquiry. So it won't be a criminal procedure that would follow, but it would help. It would come over that problem that Mr. Jeffries did raise, say, why should a child comply? I'm not criminally responsible, but this will then be a more... So we thought that was lacking from the bill. But having said that, let me just first say, we then went and looked at the Children's Act as of 2005. We looked at the Child Care Act that's still in place until that one kicks in, and we looked at the Children's Amendment Act that the committee sets now an act that also hasn't come into force yet. And Section 12 of the Child Care Act, which is still in operation until the provisions of the Children's Act are enacted, provides for a procedure whereby a social worker or a police official may remove a child where he or she has reason to believe that such child might be a child in need of care. So we thought, okay, that's maybe the similar than 7-1 where the police officer... Then we looked further and we saw, well, in the Children's Act of 2005, Section Clause 152 is exactly the same provision. But however, not all children who have committed an offense will be in need of care. And once such a child has been referred to a probation officer under the Children's impose any obligation imposed by the probation officer, then the probation officer may request the children's court to open an inquiry if we insert that clause. And then it must also be borne in mind by this committee that Clause 73A Roman I makes provision for a probation officer in any case to refer a child to a children's court for an inquiry if such a child is a child in need of care. So it's not like we're not taking that aspect into account. And in addition, if you look at Clause 95.7, that provides that the Minister of Social Development, in consultation with the Ministers of Justice, Education, Safety and Security, must maintain programs specifically suited to the needs of children below the age of 10 years. And given all of this, we thought that maybe the best place is still to address that issue of not saying to the public we're not doing anything to children under 10 and going to put in a completely different act. We thought this was the best place, especially if we tweak it by taking out the one clause, inserting another. Then another thing I just wanted to raise with the committee while we're on this clause, I believe Lolly, a committee member, saw this submission, because I see it's addressed to the chairperson of the portfolio. I don't know if you haven't received it, but I'm going to refer it from the police, and they have a comment on Clause 7, which we might also then need to take into account. And it just deals with Clause 7.1. It was given to us as the opposition.
Yes, they were going to make their own presentation, and they asked that when they make that presentation, that document goes. It's the commissioner in charge of legal services who would come but couldn't come. I think I raised it with the co-chair.
Because it's just one comment of theirs that relates to Clause 7, and I think it might be very accurate. It appeals to the way the police take the children in these instances. And they were just saying if they take the child and it's currently drafted and hand the child over, it reads, take such a child to the child's home, and if the child does not have a home, to a placement facility. But what if you find the child in this criminal situation at the child's home, and then you take it as the child has a home, but do we take the child to the placement facility? So they suggested hand such a child over to his or her parents, and then insert or an appropriate adult being then the probation. So that would be a very practical
I think we can at least three other members give that to them so that they could read that and apply their minds, and then we could come back and have a proper discussion.
Yes.
If one has regard to the timing of the two bills, at that time, the Children's Act had gone as far as it currently is. So there is, and I think we raised that at the outset, there needs to be a lot of alignment with the Children's Act. But predominantly with this particular aspect, there also needs to be the consideration, and I'm just reminding the committee of that, that you would include some of these provisions in the monitoring aspect.
That led to the assessment, and I think we said in our response
that I agreed with everything that the department has said so far. But after you just threatened you with joining the SSUP. Okay, so that one here, let's agree to that. Okay, next, Mr. Bassett.
The Fridays who is alleged to have committed an act with serious consequences in Clause 7.4a should be deleted. This term is undefined and may cause confusion about when a meeting is to be convened. The decision in this regard should be left entirely to the probation officer within his or her expertise. So that's 7.4a. And 7.4a, just to put it in perspective, provides that purposes of a meeting convened by a probation officer are to assist such probation officer to establish more fully the circumstances surrounding the allegations against a child who is alleged to have committed an act with serious consequences. And she's saying that that should be deleted because it will cause confusion. And our response to that is, the meeting envisaged in this provision was specifically aimed at a child in this age category that has committed an act with serious consequences, and to limit such meetings to these instances. The meeting is to be arranged at the instigation of the probation officer, and it would be up to him or her to decide if the circumstances call for such a meeting. That's it. Lyric, would you like to add anything?
So what we're saying is even to the discretion of the probation officer.
It is really only for the serious, for this, the serious class.
Rated coin, clause 3 of where we say that in a prescribed manner the probation officer may refer a child to a children's court and then the child inquiry will be held. So are we changing, are we going with the proposal of provisional orphan, or are we keeping it as is?
It says that we keep it as it is, Chair.
Probation officer to then take no action.
That's, you know,
being a problem? Does anybody else in the hearing it being a problem?
No, I suppose it also depends on whether, you know, if you eventually decide on 12 as one cutoff age, there will be no issue at all. Otherwise, I mean, the other terminology could be to say a child below the age of criminal responsibility, and then that would include either under 10s or...
Okay, so, yeah, that's one rejected. That stays is. Next one is message 4.1.
That's dealing... That falls away because it's probation officer or any other suitable person, and our response is that the committee has already heard evidence that that's not going to be the case.
And then 5.1?
From Childline. Childline argues that 48 hours is too long a period for a child at the age of 10 to wait a placement in a child and youth care centre to be returned home, and Childline suggests that sentence should read, must immediately take such child to the child's home. Clause 7.1 already requires a police official to take the child home immediately after arrest, and the 48 hours is exception to that. So there's already an injunction for the police officials to take the child home immediately, and that 48 hour period is there to provide flexibility for practicalities, which undoubtedly exist.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's practical to prescribe it to that degree. I mean, it's already set in 7.1 immediately, so I think we leave it as is. I don't know.
Is that the actions prescribed under clause 7.3a should be read within the context of paragraph b, which makes it clear that any actions under paragraph a may not require a child to be held responsible in any way. An assessment is not a trial, and the consequences thereof to help the child and not to punish the child. And we refer to what Professor de Blanche said and what has been said today, that the child must not, such a child must not get scot-free. It's very important for some sort of
might be in desperate need of some form of counselling or whatever, and I think we shouldn't take that away. Okay, so that one then also rejected. Stays as is. Okay, clause 9. No, sorry, where am I now? I'm looking at the comments.
Clause 8, there were no comments on that, but I can ask Tanda just to deal with it.
For the assessment of a child below the age of 10. The assessment is dealt with in Chapter 5 of the Bill. Clause 8 makes Chapter 5 applicable to the assessment of a child below the age of 10 is to be done in terms of Chapter 5, but then exclude the sections, some sections of Chapter 5 which deals with cases where the child is taken to a second phase or the child will be prosecuted. So, but sections of Chapter 5 that apply to a child below the age of 10 years are only those sections where the child is not taken for prosecution or any other processes in terms of the bill, like an inquiry diversion.
In other words, just to add on what Tunde said, that clause 8 piggybacks on chapter 5 dealing with assessment, but it excludes a few sections that just will not apply for very obvious reasons. It will not apply to clause 35 because that deals with assessment before preliminary inquiry. It doesn't apply to certain sections in 40 because those deal with acknowledgement of responsibility, and section 41 dealing with recommendations by probation officer, in which case provisions of section 7.3 apply. So I think it's pretty self-explanatory. It just piggybacks on
any event, self-explanatory in other parts as well, so it's just really to probably assist with the understanding thereof. Members happy? Happy.
Quietly
happy. Bulalani, the co-chair wants to know if you have anything to say. We'll take that as well. Okay, 2 of 9.
I think A, paragraph A, might take into consideration there, might take into consideration that we might increase.
The whole clause would consequentially then be depending on what policy decision we take in principle.
Clause 9 deals with the criminal capacity of children age 10 or older but below the age of 14 years. The clause provides because I basically amend common law regarding the criminal capacity of a child aged 10. Currently, in terms of the common law, a child who is 7 years old or older, but below the age of 14, is presumed to lack criminal capacity, and the presumption is rebuttable. Then the clause amends the age and increase the age from the age of 7 years to age of 10 years. Now, a child aged 10 or older but below the age of 14 in terms of the bill is presumed to lack criminal capacity, but the presumption is rebuttable. In terms of the bill, this category now consists of children who are 10 years old or older but below the age of 14. The clause provides that a child who is age 10 but below the age of 14 is presumed to lack criminal capacity, but the presumption can be rebutted, which means that the state will have to prove that the child has criminal capacity and can act in terms of the appreciation. The clause also sets out factors which must be taken into account by the prosecutor in deciding or in deciding to prosecute the child, which includes the educational level of the child, the domestic and environmental circumstances of the child and the maturity of the child, the nature and the gravity of the offense and the impact of the offense on the victim, the assessment report by the probation officer, and the prospect of establishing the criminal capacity in terms of clause 10 of the bill, which deals with the criminal capacity. And the issue of the interest of the community should also be taken into account. If the prosecutor decides that it is likely that the criminal capacity will be proven in terms of clause 10, he or she must, if the child is accused of committing a Schedule 1 offense, consider diversion as provided in Section 11B of the bill. That's the diversion by the prosecutor in terms of Clause 42. Where the prosecutor feels that the child, where the matter is not diverted as contemplated in Clause 11, the child accused of a Schedule 2 offense, or the child is accused of committing Part 2 of Schedule 3 offense, then the matter must proceed in terms of, as contemplated in Clause 11, that will be diversion. That is to refer the matter in terms of the preliminary inquiry in terms of Clause 7. When the prosecutor decides that it's unlikely that the criminal capacity of the child will be proven and the matter cannot be diverted or prosecuted, he or she must refer the child to a probation officer to be dealt with in terms of clause 6 and 7 of the bill. That's the type where the criminal capacity cannot be proven. Clause 9 too provides that the common law regarding the criminal capacity of a child age 7 or older but below the age of 14 is
see if we decide on the MARC of 12, some of these provisional rules will still apply, but they'll apply to children between the age of 12 and under 14.
If the committee decides that there must still be an irrebuttable presumption, that is, I don't know whether that's really been discussed, that possibility.
You didn't have that discussion because I don't fully understand what the lawyers say when they write. They say they are, I've got my notes, but I didn't have time last night. I can go into the movies, for which I don't apologize. But, you know, I think they say there are two aspects of the rebuttable presumption. And they say part one is done, and part two is not done. If I remember correctly, part one is, does the child have the capacity to, does the child have the moral, and I call it moral, somebody child likes to insert, does the child have the emotional, psychological, intellectual, moral, whatever, capacity to understand right from wrong? Now that apparently is easier for people to assess. What is more difficult is to know if that's the case, whether they're aware of the act that they've done. I don't know how they put it. Can somebody simplify it for me? That's too fast. The most part of the lawyer
will understand the difference between.
Now, let me write it down. You know why? I don't follow things easily unless I write them down. Okay.
The inquiry is whether the child can understand the difference between right and wrong, and whether the child could act
in accordance with that knowledge at the time and in the circumstances of the offence.
That's your finding clause 10, share the wording comes out into clause 10.
Can act in accordance with the?
With the knowledge.
With the knowledge. With the understanding.
To appreciate the
in certain specific circumstances.
To appreciate the difference between right and wrong and to act in accordance with that appreciation.
So everybody says it's easier for all the stakeholders to do one, but they find it difficult to do two.
I think there were some calls from NGOs that we should raise, or from lots of NGOs, that we should raise the age of criminal capacity to 12. I don't recall seeing any, and that's what they want. And there was one, and I remember Professor Sloth-Nielsen saying that the second phase between the present laws, that's between 7 and 12, that's the rebuttable presumption, and that whole test should fall away because it doesn't work well in practice and it's abused and it's not done properly. That's right. And there was a call from her side to say get rid of that rebuttable presumption. And then if that's the case, and my colleagues can help me here, I don't recall any comments saying that we raise the age of criminal capacity to 12, but that we keep a rebuttable presumption from 12 to 14. I might be wrong there, but I don't remember anything.
Let's hear from them first.
Well, the way I recall it was the child line said that we should raise it from 10, it should rather be 12, but with retaining the rebuttable presumption. And I think that the reasoning behind that is that we'd be taking away some protection from 12 and 13-year-olds. Yeah. And I think Professor Sloth-Nielsen's view was, well, yes, you might be losing some, but often those children would be found to have criminal capacity, like the girl in the P case. She was 12. That whole inquiry happened in court, but she was found to have criminal capacity. And so what you would lose in terms of the one or two children that would get that advantage of the protection, on the other hand, you'd have complete certainty in all of this. Most of what's in Section 10 then can fall away. You don't have to have any experts. You don't have to bring them in because you're simply going then with a principle that below the age of 12, you cannot be prosecuted. There's not really any more time to evaluate whether you have criminal capacity or not. The law says you don't. So there's a big advantage of simplicity in that approach. And I think what Professor Sloth-Nielsen also said was that the Committee on the Rights of the Child don't seem to like these Doley in Care Pact presumptions, and many other countries have done away with them. The Law Commission report, though, shows that when we did do a consultation on that, admittedly quite a long time ago now, in South Africa there was still a lot of support for the donor incapac presumption, based on the idea that you are presumed not to have criminal capacity if you're below 7, you're completely presumed, and if you're between 7 and 14, this is the current law, you're presumed until the state can show otherwise. So some people felt, well, you know, one 11-year-old is very different from another, one 12-year-old is different from another, and so that the donor incapac presumption helps us to identify within, you know, for each child. And I think, you know, from a pure child rights perspective, that's probably a very good way to do it. The disadvantage of what comes with that is that you will have to have expert involvement. But the number of cases is not that huge, and if you're going to raise it up to 12 and then only do those investigations between 12 and 14, it will be very serious. And you'll only really do it, I think, where the cases are very serious, because otherwise the prosecutors will divert. So you'll be talking about murders and rapes and robberies of children aged 12 and 13, but then at least you could have an expert to assess them to see whether or not they were. You know, for example, what we've seen is that some children are very developmentally delayed. Children who are subject to fetal alcohol syndrome, for example, you see them, they're actually even physically very, very small. You know, so if you see one of them charged and they're already 12, you think, oh, what's this child doing in the criminal system, because he looks like an 8-year-old. And so, you know, in those circumstances, a psychological assessment to see if they've actually gained any of the milestones would be quite important. So those are the two, you know, there are advantages and disadvantages to both of those approaches of scrapping the donor incapac or keeping it.
Prosecute or divert. CJA proposed clause 9(1)(b) be separated from clause
Rules 91A in place under a heading which reads decision to divert or prosecute a child aged 10 or older but under the age of 10 years. I see we said we can consider the proposal.
Okay, the process in drafting, that could be considered.
Yes, in other words, insert the heading and make it clause 10. Green number accordingly. I've got no problem. Members? Yeah. Just reads better. 2.1 is the legal aid board. They say clause 9.1 should read a child who is 10 years of age or older and who is alleged to have committed an act which constitutes a criminal. It's again the same argument they raised previously, which we said we're not.
Yeah,
no, rejected. We've dealt with that.
You're looking
for
the legal aid board.
In the Human Rights Commission, they said section 9.2 appears to combine the inquiry as to whether the child has criminal capacity with the inquiry about whether the case should be prosecuted. This should be remedied by creating a new section within section 9.2b with an appropriate heading. We said the Human Rights Commission would seem to be raising the same concerns expressed by Child Justice in 1.1. Clause 9.2 does not, however, deal with an inquiry about criminal. Within 6 days.
interest of the child, refer the child back to the probation officer to be dealt with in terms of part 2 of chapter 2. The section dealing with the child who doesn't have criminal capacity, the child under the age of 10 years.
Yeah, just a bit more background there. You might recall Doc, I nearly said Dr. Gallinetti. She's going to be Dr. Gallinetti tonight. She raised this issue yesterday, and I think Dr. Skelton also raised it, about the application of proving criminal capacity, which doesn't always go according to the way it should. I mentioned here that just by way of background, and Jackie Gallinetti said the primary responsibility in terms of the bill to determine criminal capacity is to have a look at the report of the probation officer, and I think the feeling among the NGO community is that it's not the probation officer is not ideally placed to do this, but the bill already makes provision also for an examination by a suitably qualified person, an expert. So I just give that to that bit, but I think it was also that your co-chair said that we should add the word moral in here when you have a look at must include an assessment of the cognitive, moral, emotional, psychological, and social development of the child. You request us to
insert. Yeah, I just thought it's appropriate, but I don't know what others think, and maybe I'm wrong. So what do others think?
We may be very happy to evaluate moral law. I don't know.
We have experts here. I think it might be a good thing that perhaps people from the NGO community could help us if they deal with those issues. And
I would very much go with Joan's view on that, not because I have any special knowledge about what needs to be assessed, but I know she does, because she has in fact often played this role of assessing children's criminal capacity. Just to say that I think that Lawrence's summary of what the NGO's concerns are is correct. The original conceptualization was that this assessment has to be done by somebody, really by a psychologist or a clinical social worker, not by a probation officer. And so what has been included in Section 10 is the subsection 2, which is something new or different, which seemed to suggest that the weight of the decision will be made based on a probation officer's report, although, as they've pointed out in their response, you can move on to 3 and see how it should be done. We just think that that is the correct way to do it in 3, and that the inclusion of 2 sort of dilutes the strength of that.
You may have cases where they don't move on to 3. Where the decision is taken, I'm interrupting.
That's where I'd also like the committee, if you read this, just look at page 35 where the commission itself looked at, because the necessity of having an expert in addition to the probation officer has always been mooted by the NGO community. But we must be realistic once again in what government can do. Even the Law Commission back then, and we support this view now, so 2008, the requirement of expert evidence in all cases of children under the age of 14 years, which was proposed by the Law Commission itself in the discussion paper, but then they came down the report, may well be unaffordable and impractical in this country, especially in rural areas and smaller towns where such expertise is not readily available. So what this bill then does in Clause 10 is a compromise. It says it's up to the inquiry magistrate in the circumstances, and it does give you the option for an expert, but we can't make it compulsory for government.
Yeah, the next one, you have the magistrate, the inquiry magistrate, there is oversight on the part of the court who will then, if you've got a child who that you're not entirely sure, then at least there is that discretion available to refer it further.
And this clause is also linked to another clause towards the back of the bill, because that deals with financial implications. Just trying to find it.
You also
have
a question to deal at the age of
I'm not convinced.
It's a practical consideration. And
challenges we've had, we've almost dispensed, even though the law is allowed, the dispense of the procedure where we take children to the district surgeon, simply because we cannot afford or cope with it. So, and that is why it's given a wider range here as a compromise.
So you're keeping it as it is, subject to further discussion in our respective study groups. And okay, let's just read further.
Mr. Bassett,
your next one.
That's from Child Justice Alliance. I think lots of these, the comments of Child Justice are the same as what you just discussed. And then
the child line one is the first one is the same issue.
Yes. So I see child line also co-chair suggested that the word moral be inserted into that. So that's interesting to see.
And we've agreed to that, I think.
Yes. And then the legal aid board said it should be made clear that the relevant date for determining the age of the child is the date on which the alleged offence was committed. And I think that we must put in the address.
Yeah,
I had it in, yes.
Members?
Yes.
Members,
Shereen.
Not
a
member.
I just wanted to raise one concern. I know we've not really discussed that with the department, but the issue with morals, especially when you look at, and perhaps this is something that can be prescriptive somewhere else, is if you look at the child-headed household, when you're going to determine morals, when children have not been provided the life skills by parents or communities around them, moral would be defined completely different. And with most of the submissions, there's a constant reference to children, and the assumption or the interpretation of children within the normal type of family setup. The majority of children that we see coming to the criminal justice system are not necessarily coming from the normal type of background. They're highly dysfunctional communities and societies. So I'm not saying that we must forget, because they are more victims of these, literally. But we need to just, when we're defining morals, the question of who's morals, and without necessarily life skills and support, our children from those types of dysfunctional communities, where there's a great deal of violence as well, what would be the question or the testing that you must take out?
Yeah, but presumably in the assessment, they will take that into account.
Of course, I'm just driving with
that. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure. I recognize what you're saying, but I don't think it detracts from the need to have this done.
Okay, that's
4.1, and the remaining one is 4.2, and the legal aid made the same comment as it did under clause 7,
which we rejected.
And which we rejected. You said for child justice, we must probably only be starting about 11 o'clock on Wednesday.